Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. Box Elder County delays a vote on a hyperscale data center under pressure from protesters and Utah leaders. How Shark Tank investor Kevin O'Leary, the face of Utah's massive data center project, amassed his wealth. And Representative Blake Moore is defeated at the Utah GOP convention and will face a primary challenger in June. Later in the program, we'll be talking with Salt Lake Tribune State Watch reporter Addie Baird. Right now, we bring in Tribune culture, food, and business editor Sean Means. So, Sean Means, thank you so much.
Glad to be here.
So, you've been editing all these, most of these data center stories, finger on the pulse. This is big news. Here's one of the headlines: hyperscale data center project in Utah expected to generate and consume more power than the entire state near its final approval. Of course, it's hit a bit of a snag here at the final stages. So just tell us in brief what this project is proposed to be.
Well, in brief would be lovely. I will say, just to correct you a bit, I'm one reporter out of several that have been working on these stories over the last week. We first got wind of this about a week ago when the board for MIDA, the Military Installation Development Authority, had a meeting last Friday, and they presented this project, this data center project, and passed a bunch of resolutions approving it and moving it forward. And we were all in looking at that and going, what is this? Because this is this appears to be a massive undertaking. What we know right now is that there are 40,000 acres of land in unincorporated Box Elder County that have been designated. Deals have been struck with the people who the private landowners, to put these together into a massive data center campus. So it's a campus. So it would not be just one single data center. It would be a bunch of data centers that would be built up in unincorporated Box Elder County, and aimed at so-called hyperscale data users. And we're talking about the big companies like Google and Amazon, the folks that crank out a lot of data computing power. The questions that usually come up with data centers are that A, they take up a lot of energy, and B, they take up a lot of water for cooling purposes. And the folks who made the presentation said that they had those two things solved. That they were going to not just build the data centers, they were going to build their own power stations. And we don't know whether that's generators or turbines, what have you. But they would build those up, and those would generate the power that the data centers would use. And then if there was any left over, it would go back into the grid for you and I to use to power our toasters and whatnot. And that sounds great. And to some people, that sounds too good to be true. And that's always something to keep an eye on in a thing like this. And then the second thing was the water. And obviously we are a desert state. We live, you know, near a terminal lake that has been getting smaller all the time. And we've been living in drought for several years on end, so the water issue is obviously a big deal. They claim that the people making the pitch for this data center campus make the claim that they will be able to take the water, circulate it, and then put it back into the aquifer, and that they would the amount of water they would use would be less than what ranchers who are using that land right now for their cattle would be using. Again, many people are skeptical about that, and we found that out how skeptical when we saw that the first water rights application that was made with the state has now more than 400 people complaining about it, which is unusual for something as standard and as bureaucratic as a water rights transfer. So there are a lot of questions. There's in some ways more questions than answers still so far about what this will do, how it'll do it, how many jobs it'll produce. One of the standard complaints about data centers is that there's a lot of jobs during the construction phase, but then after that, very few people are required to actually run the thing. So that any jobs that come out of something like this are short-term and temporary. The claim made by the people pushing this is that it is that there are some 2,000 high-paying jobs that would be that would continue on during the life of the data center campus, and they also make the claim that they wouldn't have more than that. That they wouldn't have more than 2,000 jobs because they don't want to disrupt the atmosphere of the community up in Box Elder County. They don't want to turn it into a boomtown that would have to then absorb thousands and thousands of new people, and somehow damage the character of Box Elder County. Those are the claims that were made by the folks proposing this project to the MIDA board last week, and the MIDA board signed off on all of it. And pending approval of a what's called an interlocal agreement with Box Elder County, essentially anything that MIDA does, they have to get the local government where they're doing it to sign off and to agree that to let MIDA come in and do these things. So that's where the Box Elder County Commission comes in. They had their first meeting a week ago Wednesday. The first time they talked publicly about this project. And the commissioners themselves said they had only heard about the project a couple weeks earlier. So this is fairly new to them. They're trying to sort through this very massive thing very quickly. And everyone makes the pitch that this has to be done fast because we're dealing with companies that if they can't get what they want here, they'll go somewhere else. And so there's this massive push to move, do it now, do it fast, get everything nailed down. County Commission in Box Elder County, three men who are on the commission, they were originally going to have a meeting late Friday afternoon last week. That got postponed to Monday this week. And at Monday's meeting, some 80 people filled the chamber of the county commissioners. Not a big room, you know, it's a meeting room and it's in a small county. But it was filled up with people protesting, holding signs, getting mad. And they have a lot of concerns about the water, about the land, about the water, about the energy use, everything all at once. So the county commission decided, okay, yes, everybody wants us to move fast on that. Yes, the people involved with this thing want us to move fast, but we gotta slow it down a bit. And so they decided they were going to give everybody a week, and that this coming Monday there's going to be a county commission meeting where, as near as we can tell, there's going to be some public input and public comment on this project. So that's where it all stands right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we're waiting for the big meeting on Monday.
So you mentioned this. I want to highlight this. The original phase would be approximately the amount of power that Utah uses right now, the entire state, right? And when it scales up, it'd be about double what Utah uses right now. This is hyperscale.
Yes, they're talking about 9 gigawatts, which is a big number, and to power this thing, this campus, and that would be more. I think that would be more than double of what the state currently uses for everything. Mm-hmm. The amount of power that is currently used in the state, double that, and that's what this project would do.
Mm-hmm.
And the question becomes: okay, how do you get that much power? And one of the reasons they've chosen this particular space of land up in Box Elder County is that there is a natural gas pipeline, the Ruby pipeline, that runs right through it. And they figure if they can hook onto that, take some natural gas, buy some natural gas off of that, which is a pipeline that is, according to what we've been told, rather underutilized right now. It's not going at full capacity. If they can buy up some of that capacity, use that natural gas to fire up their turbines, fire up their generators, whatever they're using, and that will power the whole supply data center thing. Now, of course, natural gas is a fossil fuel. You burn it, there's greenhouse gases involved. So figuring out how much there are and what that's going to do to the air around in Box Elder County and maybe the air in the rest of the state, that's another question mark.
These protesters at the meeting in Box Elder County, I'm looking to photograph some of the signs. We can't afford this. Where's the research? Say no to the data center. What were the objections that they were saying, these people?
The big, I mean, the object, some of them are the same objections you hear about any project of this nature, that the environmental impact is going to be either massive or not, is not thoroughly understood yet, and that they want more time to find out why. The biggest objection seems to be the one that we're talking about, is that this is barreling down on people very quickly, and they don't know enough about it. They want people to sort of take a time out and find out more and get more information before they go further with it.
So, a project of this scale, we're talking about, five companies. You mentioned Amazon, what, Google, Facebook,
Yeah.
the Apple,
Meta, Apple, folks like
yeah.
that, yes.
And so the organizers here are worried that they might go elsewhere. They're trying to attract these folks here. So, tax breaks are part of this as well, right?
Right. And one of the things that might have passed was a tax break for and is basically the amount of tax put on the energy use. And the standard for most places for this sort of thing is about 6%. They might have put in a deal to cut it to half of 1%. Meaning that the state or the municipality are not going to be getting the full tax advantage that they would have been getting from any other project. Now, the argument is made that what you lose on one end, you gain from the fact that there's so much going on, that there's so much energy being produced, that half of 1% is still going to be a big chunk of money. That is the argument. That is the argument that MIDA and the people that passed that deal will say. There are also some other tax benefits that would go back to the developer of the project. There's various splits. 80, I think an 80-20 split is one of the things that's talked about, and how the 20% would be split between the state and the municipality, and also with MIDA involved in there. It gets very complicated. I'd recommend reading the story because I'm not doing it justice here to what the work that our reporters have done. I do want to, speaking of which, I do want to call out several of our reporters that have been working on this thing. Samantha Moylanen was in the meeting Monday in Box Elder County. She has been on this from the beginning, and has been doing great work trying to explain this in simple language. We've had other reporters, Leah Larson, Tony Semrad, Jordan Miller, and myself a little bit, and just so many of our people have jumped into this. Oh, Megan Banta as well. And this is because it is so complicated and there's so many facets to it, and there's some that we still haven't gotten to yet that we're still working on. We've got a good crew, a good team here, reporting on this story. I want to make sure I'm speaking for many at the moment. I'm representing a very, very solid team.
Yeah, Tribune's doing a great job on this. Of course, this is a hot topic as well. Nationwide, people are having concerns about data centers. This one's hyperscale as well.
Yeah.
So, tell me about the landowners. Tony Semrad did a separate story on, you know, who do we think the landowners are? This is some public land, some private land, but it appears the landowners are in favor of this.
As best as we can tell, a couple of them testified at a couple of the county council meetings, saying they were in favor of it. I think it's good for the economy up there in Box Elder County. Getting them to talk more is a problem for us because they have all signed non-disclosure agreements. And so will not talk to us in depth about why they made the decision to sell their land or sign over their land, whatever, to this project. Now there are two small bits of the one interesting thing is that all the land in most of the land is up north of the Great Salt Lake in Box Elder County, and we have a map online at sltrip.com that explains all this. Most of the private land are in these two large sections of land north of the Great Salt Lake. There are two other small parcels that are actually on the west side of the lake. One parcel is owned by the Utah Trust Lands Administration, the agency we used to call CITLA. And another one is the Utah Test and Training Range. It's and each of those are about a square mile of land, way far away from the rest of the land. And we have been trying to get to sort of figure out what that land is, what's going on with those lands and why they're involved in all this. And some of it is that because some military land is involved, that allows MIDA, the Military Industrial Development Authority, to be involved in the project to begin with. And then also having a little bit of CITLA land, a little bit of trust land, Utah Trust Lands Administration property, allows the state to get their toe into the water as well. So those are some of the interesting wrinkles that we've discovered in our reporting, and we are continuing to sort of flesh out in our reporting.
So, and there you have a separate story. Megan Bandon, Samantha Moylan, and just published, I think, today, on detailing what MIDA is, Military Installation Development Authority. I think a lot of people don't know even what this is. These are the people pushing this and organizing this project.
Right. When we got this word about MIDA, we've heard about MIDA a little bit over the last couple of years. It's an agency created by the state that sort of works behind the scenes to help develop land that is owned by, controlled by, or has some relationship to the military installations in the state of Utah. And of course, the big one for Camp Williams is obviously one of those, but the big one, of course, is Hill Air Force Base up near Ogden. The question is, how do these projects connect to military work done in the state of Utah? One project they were working on was some hotel and inn space around the Sundance Resort. Down in Provo Canyon, and one of the ways that this became a MIDA issue is that they have been working to give discounts to military veterans and active duty military, and that making that part of the program makes that under MIDA's authority. There are advantages apparently to being involved with MIDA. You cut through a lot of red tape. We're told that they have some taxation authority. They have some authority similar to a city or a county, and you can go through them to, get things moving along where the, involving funding or taxation or other things. The story that we had that Megan Batta and Samantha Moylan wrote. Explains it far better than I can, and so I highly recommend everybody give it a read.
Now, local governments have a say, right? And I guess the public has some say here as well.
The argument, one of the issues and one of the things people have complained about MIDA is that when the public gets its say, it's after everything's been decided. Hmm. that there on one of the on one of the ski resort projects, I think, and we have this in the story that Megan and Samantha wrote. The public hearing was a month after everything was voted on, which seems to be a little, backwards. When and then the issue up in Box Elder County, initially at the Monday at last Monday's meeting, people were complaining, well, why we didn't get to talk, we didn't get to testify about this, we didn't get to voice our concerns. And the county council people, county commissioners said, well, we had a public meeting last week. Well, they did. They had a public meeting on the Wednesday before, but if you didn't know exactly what you were looking for on the agenda, you didn't know what this was about, because it was really the first time anything had unfolded about this thing, about this project for the general public. So there have been complaints that, yes, there's public input and public comment, but that it's insufficient to the size and scope of the projects that are involved.
So, as you mentioned, and Leah Larson and Samantha Moreland have a story in this. Hundreds have responded to the water rights question, right? There were, many at the meeting at Box Elder County. So, what's next? A meeting on Monday, is it?
The Box Elder County Commission is having its meeting on Monday, where they will be asked, they will face the question once again of, do they want to sign this interlocal agreement with MIDA that will be the next step in getting the ball rolling to create this project.
Okay.
And they moved the meeting from the commissioner's chambers to a bigger building out at the fairground, at the county fairgrounds, because they expect more people will show up.
And I noticed a link in one of these stories at sltrib.com for the Box Elder County Commission's taking public comment. And there's an online form there. You can just go to sltrib.com, read the stories, and you'll find that link. Well, let's take a break. We're talking on Behind the Headlines today, right now, with the culture, food, and business editor Sean Means from the Salt Lake Tribune. Following the break, talk about a couple of stories Sean has done. Talk about Kevin O'Leary. He is becoming the face of this data center project. He's putting up some of the money here. And also want to talk about an appreciation of Alan Osmond, who the oldest of the singing siblings, who died recently. We'll have those stories following this break. You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. Later in the program, we'll be talking with Tribune State Watch reporter Addie Baird. Right now, we have culture, food, and business editor Sean Means. Let's turn to this story, Sean. Here's the headline: how Shark Tank investor Kevin O'Leary, the face of Utah's massive data center project, amassed his wealth. So Sean O'Leary's company, I think, is behind this. They're the ones pushing this.
Right, O'Leary Ventures is the name of his company, and you may be familiar with Kevin O'Leary. He's one of the investors that you see on the TV series Shark Tank. He's Canadian. He got a start in Canada. Started with a software company that did educational software that later became the learning company, and made a good chunk of money when that got acquired by Mattel, the company best known for Barbie and Hot Wheels. There was, at the time of the acquisition, there were questions about how well that company was run, how well the learning company was run. There were lawsuits, there were settlements. It gets all complicated, as things with money tend to be. But he has this reputation as being a very savvy investor, a reputation gained in large part from the Shark Tank program. And he is a big backer of AI and of data centers. The name that he is that he and his company have given to this project is Wonder Valley, Utah. MIDA calls it the Stratos project, but O'Leary's name for it is Wonder Valley, Utah, and that mirrors a similar project that that O'Leary has been spearheading up in Alberta, Canada, also called Wonder Valley. And what's going on right now up in Canada with the Wonder Valley project, I think, is an indicator of why O'Leary and Maida and the people who are backing this project are are talking about wanting to do things quickly. Wonder Valley in Canada was first announced in December 2024. As of right now, almost 17 months later, they have not started construction. The Canadian Environment Minister, the Ministry of Environment, and I can't remember the full title, but it's the Environment Ministry in Alberta, just recently ruled that they don't have to do their own environmental impact statement for the Wonder Valley Canada project, but that they want O'Leary's company to submit information about the environmental impacts as well. And that was a significant ruling, and that was only a couple of weeks ago. The Wonder Valley Canada is still waiting for the building permits to come through, so they can start building on this land that they have been talking about for more almost a year and a half. So that is an indicator of why O'Leary and his folks might be wanting to push quickly on the Utah project, is they don't want to have the same thing happen to them that has been happening up in Canada. O'Leary has been making the rounds of the national talk shows. He was on Fox and Friends on Monday morning. He was on CNN Tuesday morning, and he is really making the push that this data center, in addition to being great for the economy and great for the local economy, great for the national economy, would be attractive to these hyperscaled companies like Google and Amazon and so on. He also makes the argument that it's a national security issue, that we are in an AI race, particularly against China, and that we need to do that. According to O'Leary, the United States needs to do more to pull up even with China, to create these AI centers here in the United States.
That's a point I think Governor Cox and other state leaders are making as well. So just one more, I guess, parting shot on Kevin O'Leary, a Shark Tank, of course, and he recently made his acting debut in a Marty
Yes,
Supreme.
he appears in a prominent role in the movie Marty Supreme. He is the financier, pen company, pen making manufacturer who bankrolls Timothée Chalamet's character's ping pong career. He is also married to the actress played by Gwyneth Paltrow, with whom Chalamet's character Marty has an affair. So it's a very unusual casting in that O'Leary is not, known as an actor, but he's playing a role that seems to be rather built around his own persona as a tough-minded businessman.
Well, so finally here, Sean Means, the headline, Alan Osmond, oldest of the si singing siblings and co-founder of Stadium of Fire, dies. Alan Osmond, the oldest of the singing siblings. The Osmonds, of course, had a couple of older sons. And then Alan was the first of the singing siblings. Tell me some highlights here of Alan Osmond.
Well, Alan was the oldest of the five brothers. If they started as a foursome, as a quartet, Alan, Jay, Merrill, and Wayne, and they started as a barbershop quartet, mostly getting gigs around the Ogden area to raise money to buy hearing aids for the two older brothers, Tom and Verl, who were deaf, or were hearing impaired. Sorry, excuse me. And that they got their gigs went from Ogden to eventually getting a regular gig at Disneyland. In 63, they were discovered by Andy Williams, the crooner. And they were given a guest spot on Andy Williams' variety show, and that became a regular gig. And around the time they started on on Andy Williams, their younger brother Donnie, who was all of 6 years old, made his TV debut. singing "You Are My Sunshine," and the quartet became a quintet, and the Osmond Brothers became the 70s equivalent of a boy band, I guess you could call them. They had a bunch of hits. One Bad Apple was probably the best known, we're sort of the Utah corollary to the Jacksons. Matter of fact, the Jackson Five and the Osmond Brothers were sort of running parallel careers for a good many years, and Donny Osmond and Michael Jackson were actually friends, and they could commiserate with each other about, their place in showbiz as the youngest in the and the heartthrob of their respective family groups. But Alan Osmond was the leader. He was the oldest. He was sort of the leader of the group, and he was the and as Donnie said in Instagram after Alan died, he was the protector. He sort of kept everybody. He was in a sort of family bear hug. Alan also was Alan along with Alan along with Jay and Merrill. They were responsible for taking over the fireworks show and entertainment show at what was then Cougar Stadium at BYU in Provo, and they built it into what's now Stadium of Fire, which is the largest single building fireworks show in the country every year for the 4th of July, and is a big, massive tourist draw. The first 4 years that Alan oversaw Stadium Fire, the Osmond Brothers were the headliner act, and some form of Osmond, some part of the Osmond family were on the bill for the first 10 years. And so Alan, Alan started that and kept that going. And he also, the other thing about Alan is that in 87, he sort of retired from performing because he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And he dealt with that for nearly 40 years. And the family said that one of his lines was, "I have MS, but MS doesn't have me." And that he persisted dealing with that, the family remembrances for him after he died last week were quite touching and quite moving.
One little factor that tickled me, he recounted that during Stadium of Fire early years, he wanted to set a record by igniting a million firecrackers during the show. It didn't go so well.
He had this idea. He wanted to set the Guinness record for 1 million firecrackers, and they had it set up. And the thought was they would go off in sequence. That have a few go off, and then more go off, and then more go off, and you'd get good 10 minutes of excitement and pyrotechnics. They all went off at once. Just one big boom, and it freaked everybody out. And I think Alan was thrilled to pieces. I think it's like it may not have been exactly what he planned, but boy, it was fun.
Yeah, he along with others made that successful. That event still is. So one other thing that I learned from the story here, I knew the Osmonds went to Branson. I didn't know they all moved out there.
Most of the family, I mean, not Donnie and Marie, because their careers were still quite thriving where they were. But again, it was Andy Williams who talked them into it, because Andy Williams had a theater in Branson. And it was Jimmy Osmond, the youngest of the brothers, who looked over the situation and said, "Yeah, we can make some money here." So they started the Osmond Family Theater. Several members, some Alan and I think Wayne and Marilyn and Jay and Jimmy moved to Branson. They joked that they pretty much doubled the public school population just themselves. In there, and interestingly enough, because of the Osmonds moving to Branson, that area of Missouri and Arkansas and the Ozarks had enough people that they opened their first Latter-day Saint meeting house.
Wonderful. The effect one family can have.
Had their first LDS ward.
I'm looking at just a parting shot here. I'm looking at the Instagram post from Donnie. I don't know how old Alan would have been here, you know, maybe 10 or something. And he's holding baby Donnie. Donnie, very touching post. He says that's how Alan had me for the rest of my life, right? His arm around me. Yeah.
Yeah. The funeral is this weekend. The funeral is this weekend in Orem, and we're expecting it's going to be, as funerals go, going to be entertaining, because Alan was an entertainer, and I think he liked the idea of people enjoying themselves.
Well, we've been talking with Salt Lake Tribune Culture, Food, and Business Editor John Means. Sean, thanks so much for telling us about all of these stories.
Happy to be here.
Following a break, we'll continue behind the headlines. A recorded interview with Addie Baird. Talked to her yesterday. Here's one of the headlines. We'll be talking about Representative Blake Moore is defeated at the Utah GOP convention. Will face a primary challenger in June. We'll have more of behind the headlines following this break. You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. We bring in State Watch reporter Addie Baird. Addie, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, good to be here.
So we want to treat, first of all, the massive data centers we've been hearing so much about and talked about earlier in the program here. Maybe first, we're going to talk a little bit later in this segment with you about the Republican convention that happened recently. So the Box Elder Hyperscale Data Center, the headline reads, GOP candidate stays silent. I guess you were, sought comment from some of the for example, Representative Blake Moore. No comment?
That's right. No comment from Representative Blake Moore, who represents what is currently District 1, but will most of it will soon be District 2, and that's where he's running for re-election.
And his opponent coming up, Representative Carrie-Anne Lisenby, no comment as well?
Correct. I heard nothing from Lisenby either. She is currently running for what will be that new 2nd District and primarying Representative Moore.
Any other candidates? What's the Democrat saying?
The Democratic candidate, the Democratic nominee in the district is Peter Crosby, and he raised some concerns about the data center. He said he is concerned about the potential environmental impact on water and air. He's concerned that there hasn't been enough public comment and that the project is being rushed. This is a lot of what we're hearing from people in the district. There was a big group of people who went to the Box Elder County Commission meeting earlier this week. And pushed for them to delay and take more public comment. So what we heard from Crosby was definitely part of what we had heard from people in the district against the center this week.
Governor Cox has spoken out, I guess, in general about data centers. Has he talked about this hyperscale data center in Box Elder?
Yes, he had his monthly news conference today. I'm pre-recording this, a peek behind the curtain. It's Thursday, so that was this morning as we record. That was yesterday as you listen. And he was asked about the data center. And as Sean, I'm sure, mentioned, this is a data center that would both produce and consume more energy than the entire state consumes. That is massive. And Cox was asked about that this morning, and he basically said that he supports it. He said that he has talked to Kevin O'Leary, who is the celebrity Shark Tank investor behind the project, and that their conversations have been very positive. He said that he has historically been pretty neutral on data centers. I would argue, having covered him and written about data centers and written about his relationship to them, that pretty neutral is not exactly how I would describe it. He has been in favor. He has pushed against people who raise concerns about the water use and the impact on the Great Salt Lake. He has been very, very in favor of the, as he likes to say, the United States winning the AI arms race. And he talked about that this morning. He said that Utah has an obligation to allow for these data centers to come into our state because if we don't, then we are letting China win the AI technology race.
Let's turn next to the convention, Republican convention. I should note here, we'll talk about the Republican convention and not the Democratic convention. Robert Gerke is away and not available this week, so we'll urge you to go read his coverage in the, at sltrib.com. So I guess the big headline, Representative Blake Moore was defeated at the convention, although he will go on to keep running.
That's right. There was definitely something of an anti-incumbent bent to the Republican delegates voting this time around. Moore has been defeated at convention before, and the delegates have chosen to endorse a primary challenger over him in previous cycles, and he's gone on to win the primary handily and win the general handily. This time, his challenger is Representative Carrie-Anne Lisenby, the Republican out of Clearfield, the former House Majority Whip in the state legislature. And she is running to his right. She's running a very conservative campaign against him, and the delegates went in favor of her.
So it'd be those two, I guess,
That's
in the
right.
primary. Yeah.
There's two ways to get on the ballot. There's either the convention endorsement or you can gather signatures. So even though Moore was defeated at convention, he gathered the necessary amount of signatures from voters in the district in order to get on the ballot. So when voters go to vote in the primaries on June 23rd or early vote leading up to June 23rd, they will see both Moore and Lisenby on their ballot.
Now, you mentioned before Maura be representing, seeking to represent a different district because of the redistricting that was mandated by the court.
That's right. Moore currently represents what is the current Congressional District 1 here in Utah. All four current congressional districts contain some part of Salt Lake City. That's at the heart of the redistricting fight. The court mandated a new map for new congressional districts going into the 2026 election, and those break apart the current districts. There's now a new district that'll be the new first district. That's basically Salt Lake County. Then there is the second district, which is essentially northern Utah. That is where Moore is running, and that is where Lisenby is challenging him. That's the new second district.
So, Representative Celeste Malloy, what happened in her race?
Malloy also had a really interesting race. Malloy has a challenger of her own. She is running for re-election, and Phil Lyman, who your listeners might recognize that name, is running against her. Lyman is a previous state lawmaker. He ran and primaried Governor Cox in 2023, I believe it was, last cycle. And Lyman has kind of been a fixture in Utah politics for some time. He is really beloved by the delegates. He very nearly won the delegate support last year to be the chair of the state party. And Malloy only very nearly beat her, or sorry, beat him. She got 50.95% of the delegate votes, and Lyman got 49.04%. And it was definitely a shot in, it was definitely kind of, we're seeing the delegates not really approving of these incumbents, at least by they're not approving at like the 60% rates that they would need to really have that full-throated approval of the party.
So Malloy and Lyman will be running against each other to represent the newly drawn third district.
Yep.
Is the first district the now majority Democratic district? So what about the fourth district?
Correct. It's that first district that's now majority Democrat. Second district is where Moore is running. Third district is where Malloy is running. And the fourth district is where Mike Kennedy is running. He is our other incumbent running for re-election. Burgess Owens is not running for re-election. He currently represents the fourth district. This is a more eastern part of the state district under the new map. And Kennedy is, while Moore and Malloy are facing these challenges, he's having a little bit more smooth sailing. He got more than 70% of the votes from delegates at the convention. And I think that this is partially because the base does like Kennedy, but I wouldn't necessarily say that I have a sense that they particularly love him more than they like Malloy and Moore. And also, but largely because he doesn't really have a well-funded, well put together Republican challenger. I think that if he would have, there might have been an anti-incumbent sense that had come for him as well.
Various officials give speeches at these conventions. Senator Mike Lee spoke. What did he say?
Yes, Senator Lee is not currently running for re-election, but it's a gathering place for state Republicans, and Lee was there in person to speak, and he organized his speech around outsourcing. He talked about there is a real fight at the heart of the state Republican Party about the convention path and getting on the ballot via the approval of delegates versus gathering signatures. And he talked about outsourcing voting to, as he said it, paid signature gatherers, and that the rights of delegates were being outsourced. He talked about outsourcing our voting to, as he would say, illegal aliens. There is no evidence that there is en masse voting by non-citizens, as he argues. And that was really his theme of the speech, was this idea of outsourcing our country.
Tell me about some of the lesser-known candidates that were there. Tell me about a few of those.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of interesting down ballot races that we see at the convention. I would say a couple of the really interesting legislative races that we saw were, first of all, there was a round of voting about whether to endorse State Senate President Stuart Adams versus his primary challenger. He would be on the ballot either way. He also gathered signatures, but he got enough approval from the delegates to get on the ballot, as did a challenger. So he will have a challenger in the primary this June. One of the other really interesting races to watch that I watched early Saturday morning was the round of delegate voting in Senate District 17 or 18. It's Dan McKay's district, and he is being challenged by House lawmaker Doug Fiafia. And although both of them got enough votes to both be on the ballot, Fiafia, his challenger, really was quite successful and very nearly broke 60%, which would have made him the official endorsed candidate. And McKay did not collect signatures. So if he had gotten only a few more percentage points, McKay might not have even been on the ballot. However, that's not what happened, and we will see a really interesting showdown between those two Republicans running in that state Senate district come June.
Always some colorful moments. You report that one candidate took the stage and sang the Latter-day Saint hymn Love at Home, for example.
That's true. That was one of the Republicans running in the first district. The Republican convention is always interesting. There was the hymn sung as part of this speech. There was beatboxing. There was a ballroom dance performance. One thing you can never say is that it's boring.
So this was in Orem on the campus of UVU.
That's right. It was at the Utah Valley University campus, and it is really an interesting time to be there, given the killing of Charlie Kirk at the very same campus in September.
So imagine security very tight. Was there comment on that killing or on the legacy of Charlie Kirk at convention?
It definitely was an overpowering sense, I would say, even before we got in. There was definitely tighter security than in years past. And once we were there early on in the day, Rob Axon had a moment of silence and shared some words about Charlie Kirk. Axon is the chair of the state party. And just being on the UVU campus, it felt omnipresent.
Anything you'd like to say about the convention?
I mean, I would just say that it set us up for some really interesting primaries, and that it's going to be really valuable for people to pay attention to what legislative districts they're in. It's easy and it's sexy to think about the congressional races, which are obviously very interesting, But those down ballot races have a really direct impact on people's day-to-day lives a lot of the time, and they're going to be interesting to watch.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. I'm sure you'll be reporting on this on Behind the Headlines. We've been talking in this segment with Salt Lake Tribune State Watch reporter Addie Barrett. Addie, thank you so much.
Thank you.